Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are looking at Chapter 69, Shock and Ooze. And I have to say, looking at the date here, 6 Uktar, 1492 Dale Reckoning, this was a heavy evening for the party.
Yeah, heavy is the word. We are picking up right in the aftermath of that brutal Oblex fight. The silence described in the recap, it felt deafening just reading it.
Right. You have the death of Evira the Enchantress. You have Cadavix, the lich-turned-hero, essentially ending his own borrowed time to save Doug. It's a moment of massive grief.
It really is. You lose two powerful NPCs in the span of a few combat rounds. And usually, in stories, you get a moment to breathe, right? You get a funeral scene, you get a monologue.
Exactly, but D&D and D&D Rams, specifically, is rarely that kind to the players. The moment the bodies hit the floor, the adventurer instinct kicks in.
The loot goblin instinct.
The loot goblin instinct. It is fascinating, theatrically, how quickly they pivoted from mourning the dead to checking the dead's pockets. It sounds callous, but in a dungeon, it's survival.
It is. They find the Crown of Timeless body on Evira. Herax puts it on immediately. Zero hesitation. He's like, does it curse me? No? Cool. I'm wearing it.
And then the staves. This was a great character moment for Doug. He picks up Cadavix's staff, made of draconic bone, and his own carried dragon egg basically screams in his mind.
That's psychic revulsion, right? It's a great reminder that necromancy is gross, especially when you are literally carrying a baby dragon in your inventory.
So Delnus gets the bone staff, and Doug ends up with the staff of charming, which almost charmed him immediately. Just grabbing the loot is a hazard in this place.
Speaking of hazards, can we talk about Herax and the rug?
I was hoping you'd bring that up. This is the funniest juxtaposition in the chapter. We just had a tragic sacrifice, and then Herax is in the corner tickling a rug.
He is legitimately traumatized by mimics. He's poking it, tickling its weak spot, and then, realizing it's just a really nice carpet, he steals it.
He rolls it up. That's a theme of this chapter, is take everything not nailed down. Tookie takes a love letter and a ring off a dead body. They take the books on neuroscience. They sweep the room clean.
Gotta get that gold value up. But they don't rest. They push on to the next spire, the Tower of Evocation. And this is where the genre shifts entirely. We go from gothic tragedy to X Games.
It's wild. This wizard, Zedulus, turns out he was an athlete, a player of chain lightning. It's like magical rugby mixed with electrocution.
I love the setup. A slippery ice floor, bleachers, force fields, and a lightning mass that blasts anything moving. It's an American Gladiators course designed by a psychopath.
And what do the players do? They put on the jerseys. This is my favorite visual. A paladin, a cleric, a druid, wearing silk athletic jerseys over their armor.
Herax comes out in a Zedulus jersey, and the ghosts in the stands go wild. The environmental storytelling here was top tier. The tower literally remembers the roar of the crowd.
But the physics remember friction. Herax tries to be cool, slide past the lightning, and eats it. Wipe out.
Crash and burn. And Doug follows him, just a pile of heroes sliding into the kill zone.
Except Tookie. Tookie the Artificer is playing a different game. He's got these climbing gear pads. He bypasses the ice entirely, swinging from the ceiling like Spider-Man. That gnome is constantly solving problems by refusing to engage with the intended mechanics.
Work smarter, not harder. But the real twist, man, the twist made me nauseous. Herax gets tired of the ice, uses his dragonborn breath weapon to melt it, and reveals that the floor isn't stone, it's meat. It's ooze.
The realization that the ice was actually just frozen slime or a colony of oozes waiting to thaw? Horrifying. The phrase, shock and ooze, suddenly makes perfect sense.
And tactically, this went sideways so fast. They are fighting ochre jellies and black puddings. And what do you not do to an ochre jelly?
You do not hit it with lightning.
And yet the room is full of lightning. The mast shoots them. They split. Doug throws a lightning bolt. They split. Suddenly, four big enemies become 40 small ones.
It's a math problem now. Action economy is ruining them. Doug transforms into a werebear, which, side note, werebear in a jersey on ice skates is a cartoon I want to watch. But they are getting swarmed.
Enter Tookie again with the play of the game. He realizes they need a buff. They need the crowd on their side. Does he cast a spell? No.
He invents the t-shirt cannon.
He stuffs a jersey into his blunderbuss, signs it, shoots it over the force wall to a ghost fan.
And the spectral crowd goes absolutely bananas. The roar heals the party. It is the most ridiculous, high fantasy sports movie moment I have ever heard.
It's brilliant. It encapsulates what Dungeons & Drams does so well, the integration of mechanical absurdity into the narrative. That inspiration gave them just enough juice to fight to the stairs.
Spirit Guardians helps too. Delnus turning into a radiant blender is always useful.
So they escape. Battered, covered in acidic slime, and standing at the top of the stairs. And Harax looks at Tookie and says, "That was an inspiring t-shirt shot."
I felt that. Exhaustion mixed with, "I can't believe that worked." So they cleared the Tower of Evocation, but man, they burned a lot of resources. No rest. Evira is gone. They are pushing their luck.
The pace is accelerating. They're running on fumes and spectral cheers. Join us next time to see if the party finally breaks or if they take down the High Evoker himself.